We are going to head over to Perth and have a chat with Matt Swinney from Swinney Wines. Morning, Matt.
Morning, Simon. Morning, Sam.
Hi, Matt.
We were just commenting on the beautiful imagery of your website. So anyone who wants to play along on as we're having a chat for the next little bit, Swinney with a double N, swinney.com.au. Who's the photographer, Matt?
Most of her work, if not from ourselves, comes from Frances Andrich.
Right. Is that...
A lot of work at the Western Australian and Vogue and other places like that. Does some lovely work.
That's
just
stunning.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And those bush finds, they lend themselves some amazing photography. Mm. So whose idea, Matt, was it to not have any trellis?
It was mine back in the... to show my age, back in the late 90s. And, bush vines at that stage for really anywhere south of the Swan Valley was pretty different and pretty unusual.
Yeah.
And I guess I'd spent quite a bit of time in the Rhone Valley and parts of Spain, so it just, obviously clearly worked so well over there. And I thought it should work well in Franklin River.
Yeah. Amazing. So... I spent a little bit of time yesterday reading up on Swinney, but I have for a number of years sat back and watched you very closely and tasted the wines. And, you've got Mourvedre, Shiraz or Syrah, Grenache. What did the locals think when you started planting those varieties?
Well, by the time we got to plant our vineyard in First Vineyard, 1998-99, Franklin, there's plenty of good examples of Shiraz or Syrah,
yeah,
particularly across the road with Alcumi and down the road at Franklin Estate, but there weren't any examples of Grenache and Mourvedre. So, yeah, when first planted Grenache, people thought, and I don't mean the locals so much, but just in general thought that we're bonkers planting Grenache, it's never going to ripen.
Mm.
And don't even mention Mourvedre or Mourvedre. That's just silly. So, but we, as I mentioned, we'd seen how well it goes. Those varieties go in the Rhone Valley, and it was technically risky, I suppose. And there were plenty of people we spoke to who, very experienced viticulturalists, who said, "Don't do it; it won't ripen." But I guess what we didn't probably stress at the time was to plant them as Grenache, Mourvedre, bush vines on ironstone gravel with a northeastern aspect, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And happily it does ripen.
Yeah, amazing. Ray Jordan said that there's no question that the vineyard and the style being crafted here has redefined Syrah and Grenache. That's a big statement. But
totally.
Yeah, reading about your, I think, perfection or strive for perfection within the vineyard is obviously a testament to that statement. So do you want to talk to us about your, you've got 160 hectares, so it's a large planting, but... Yeah, the quantity of wines that you make is...
2,500 cases doesn't feel like a lot off that amount of vineyard coverage.
No. Well, first of all, Ray was very generous with those comments, but I guess, you look around, you go to the best estates in the world, you see how they make their wines, it's really no secret, it's all about the vineyard.
Yeah.
And so we've simply taken the approach that comes down to attention to detail and just being obsessive and uncompromising, which really means expensive these days in the vineyard in terms of, it starts with site selection, and we're fortunate to have a relatively large vineyard area to choose from. So we simply choose the sites we like the best, which means typically ironstone gravel hilltops facing northeast, so we pick the sites we like the best, which means typically parts of blocks. So if you come into the vineyard in February and into a Grenache plot, you'll see, for example, excuse me, a 2-hectare block of Grenache, and in this case, and certain vines cordoned off, and we choose those particular vines, and then we manage them our way, which means they're dry growing, and yeah, just a lot of detail.
Yeah, so there's obviously you're farming organically.
Yep.
Yeah, and so with that, you might be doing one or two or even three passes of that particular specific site. So picking when those grapes are ripe, rather than, you know, what normal conventional vineyard management is, you know, you just go through and pick the block. And then obviously before that there's your shoot and fruit thinning, and then there's that further bunch selection. So, you know, it's intensive, isn't it?
It is intensive.
Yeah,
but,
amazing.
You know, it's just what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So,
and tell me about the shade cloth.
Well, we apply shade cloth on the afternoon sides for everything that isn't bush vine. So that means the Syrah and the Riesling.
Mm-hmm. Just to protect the
from sunburn, is it, Matt? Or?
Well, it isn't so much. I mean, sunburn is the obvious piece, but it's more just the shade cloth we use takes out about 30% of the sun. So it's more just, it's really the berries that are not obviously sun affected or taken out. So you have a bunch of berries, and you have certain berries that are clearly sunburned, so they're obvious, they get removed. But it's more so the berries that you can't see the sunburn on that we're worried about. So we're just trying to remove any variability to ensure, you know, absolute fruit purity.
Wow. So, sorry, Sam, you go. Well, I want to know about Favi. Sorry, am I jumping to your best question?
No, it's fine. I'll share. It's a good story.
Well, let's go. And also, Matt, in amongst this, on your label, you've got a saying, and I want to know where it comes from, but it's whether the fates call.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So now, it to me seems like a reference back to British military. But tell us what it's about.
Yeah, it's simply a family motto. So there's a Latin equivalent, which I can't recite right now. But yes, it's whether the fates call. It really just means, you know, whatever life throws up. And Favi was our great grandfather who came out from England in the late 1800s and took up our farm in Franklin River 1922. So we came to name our main wine, our sort of ultra premium wine. It was obvious to us we should call it Favi. So Favi was the family name of my great grandfather, whose real name was George. But he had four kids, and when they were very small, the kids couldn't produce father very well. So father became Favi.
Very cute.
How often do you hear that from, you know, like a brother or a sister who can't say your name and it becomes your lifelong nickname?
Yeah.
So Favi is your premium.
So we basically, we use a very small portion of our fruit for ourselves. Like our historical focus and still a main part of the business is selling fruit to others. So across our vineyard area, we sell fruit, I don't know, 40 different producers, and we take really only, you know, 2 or 3% for ourselves. And Favi, the whole vision of Favi was to produce wines that are world class, that can sit alongside the best in their world, best in the world for their variety, while speaking of Franklin River. So that was the vision behind Favi. That's our focus. And really, as I mentioned before, it just comes back to what we do in the vineyard and that attention to detail.
Yeah. And so this is this the fifth vintage of Fabi, or am I?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The 22s.
Yeah. And so this is the 22s are the first year you've got the three varieties under Fabi.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's only a few hundred cases, and I thought I would buy some, but there you have to apply for rights to purchase. So I'll be doing that shortly. But it's interesting. Rob Mann is your winemaker.
Yep.
And he comes with an amazing amount of, obviously experience, knowledge. But I find it fascinating when the winemaker's quoting and talking about the wines, and you can hear just by reading the respect that he has for the vineyard. And he actually says, you know, he's talking about the purity of the wines, and he says, from earth to glass, expression. And I just thought, wow, you don't often read that in, you know, whether it be articles or websites or whatever. You can hear the words coming off the page and his true respect for the vineyard. So obviously Rhys Thomas, your viticulture started in 21, so pretty amazing team there.
Oh, thank you. It's a great privilege for me to, and a great pleasure for me and my sister Nels to work with people like Rhys and Rob. You know, the strength of what we do really is our people. You know, those guys, we're all working to a singular vision. We all want to achieve the same thing. And, we all love what we do and love the vision we're working to. And Rob's an incredible winemaker, and part of the reason he's so great is the focus of the vineyard. You know, Rob will say, you know, we don't want to see too much of the hand of the winemaker in the wines, the Fabi wines. We want to see the vineyard, and we're all committed to the vineyard, to how we do things our way, and very happy to be working with that team.
Where have you seen the wine, Sam? Where have you come across it?
Look, I was lucky enough to be made aware of Swinney when they, I think, the first release. There's this undercurrent of wine judges and, just winemakers who start talking about different vineyards. And so that started happening, and so I was lucky enough to try the wines and just gradually, you know, watch, you know, have a look at what they were doing. And also there's a, you know, different distributors in the industry as well who, you know, they want these vineyards that are so focused on, you know, the growing of great fruit, the, you know, attention to detail. So, you know, all of a sudden you have all this noise around a wine or a group of wines that you can't help but, take notice of. So, yeah.
And where can our listeners find your wine, Matt? How widely available are you, or is it sort of?
I'd say they're pretty well available everywhere in terms of better on-premise wine shops in the capital cities. Otherwise, through our website.
Yeah.
So they're reasonably accessible.
Are all the wines, as Sam was saying before, sort of effectively on allocation, or it's just the top wines?
No, simply the Fabis. Yep. The Swinney range, which is the entry point range in effect, they're more accessible. The Fabi wines are made in small volumes and they're typically sold in allocation.
Mm.
So, yes, we always make some available through our distributor, the Bendham. Otherwise, it's an allocation through our website.
Yeah, and yeah, so you've got a beautiful Riesling, a quite delicious rosé made from Mourvèdre.
You don't see straight Mourvèdre that much, I reckon.
No.
Not here.
No.
How many others do you know of, Matt, that in your sort of research, I guess?
Well, there's not many... Not many great Australian examples. There are some very good ones. But yes, there's not many producers doing Australian Maveds. So, you know, we look to, you know, Bandol has been really the home of Maveds, particularly. But you still find some good examples in Australia. But yeah, it's not a common variety. I mean, when we first developed Favi, our first vintage was back in 18, we always planned to release three wines, a Grenache, Merlot, and a Syrah. But at the time it felt audacious enough for us to be releasing a Grenache and a Syrah at this price point with these aspirations from a WA, let alone Franklin River, is not known for Grenache, let alone Syrah. So it took us a couple of years to get to producing a Favi Merlot, but every year around the tasting bench was putting its hand up, and in the end it was just like, no, we've just got to do this. And so this is our first year with three Merlots, three Favis, the Syrah, Grenache and Merlot. In 21 we didn't release a Favi Grenache, we had to declassify it, let some rain. This is the first year we've got all three.
Yeah, and Mourvèdre or Mourvèd can be, it's quite big and fleshy and easily, you know, and quite earthy. But I think obviously Franklin River is it's cool. So, you know, you obviously looking at more brightness and minerality and sort of a fineness to it. And I think... your oak regime or your sort of attitude to oak is quite interesting too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, just back to, I guess, the style. It's both the Grenache, well, all three wines, but particularly the Grenache and Merlot, because we're in a cool region and we're, you know, that concept of the best wines come from the warmer sites and the coolest regions where, you know, otherwise it's not going to perform. I think is relevant here. So, you know, the Grenache and the Merlot, they are finely structured, and the tannin profile is very different to what you think of for Australian Grenache and Merlot. The tannin profile is entirely different there. They often get, especially with the Grenache, people often say it tastes more like a Nebbiolo in terms of its tannin structure.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that really comes from the region being a relatively cool region. And in terms of back to the, you know, our oak, we only use large format older French oak, so you don't see any oak in this wine. It's like there clearly, but you just don't see it. We don't want you to see it. We want it to be pepper and salt, as the old saying goes. So
just the seasoning,
exactly. So it's older oak, large format, just letting the vineyard talk, letting the fruit purity come through.
If we lined up your Grenache against, I suppose a typical McLaren Grenache or a Barossa Valley Floor one, how are people going to see what are they going to see that are sort of the differences as they compared the other two to yours?
Well, we love McLaren Vale and Barossa Grenache, but they're very different animals. They're going to see, I mean, our wine does stick out for being different in those lineups, because once again it comes back to the tannin, I think, in simple terms. The alcohol, you know, that might be a bit lower as well, perhaps, but it's really the tannin profile that, if you were to be simplistic, it's the tannin.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's always an interesting exercise for us to put them together. I think stylistically it's easier to think of Franklin River Grenache as probably being more like Priorat.
Yeah, that's
we often get that sort of comparison, and hey, I'm happy with that. I love Priorat Rhines, Priorat wines. I mean, if you said to me who would be a Grenache sort of as hero, if anyone, that would be probably Alvaro Palacios.
This is in Rhone, yeah.
No, it's Priorat in Spain.
Oh, Priorat, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I was lucky enough to go there last year, and I went to one of my favourite producers, Terroir Limit, and yeah, just that region. Yeah, again, you know, you've got the grapes are ripening, but there's that coolness and fineness, and yeah, it's just you can't make those wines. Those wines are grown,
but you've got to choose where to put a plant in the ground and the right plant for it to happen. That's the thing. So when you looked at what to put in, Matt, did you have, you know, a real sense that that was going to be, you know, the right thing for that site? Because some people plant what they want to drink regardless of the site, and that certainly historically that's been the case. And maybe in the Yarra, you know, people were planting Cabernet because they love Bordeaux's. But it wasn't necessarily the best site for them, and they couldn't always get it ripe, you know. Whereas what you're saying about what you're getting from Grenache and Merved and you know, the other varieties is it's unique to that site. But when you do it, you know, there's obviously no definite. Yeah, it's not definitely going to perform the way it is now, or how it has eventuated.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're probably guilty of that to a degree as well, to be honest with you, but of planning what we love to drink. Mm. But I guess you try and bring it, I mean, like everyone else, you try and bring a discipline to your site selection as well. And we're fortunate in that we've got quite a large area to choose from, and we've got, you know, most varieties, particularly red varieties, just perform the best on ironstone gravel hilltops. So what we've done is we basically have shot large parts of the farm with the M38 ground penetrating radar. We've identified the pockets of ironstone gravel. We then ground truth them, modelled them, and so we just chase the gravel. You know, basically, gravel on the right aspect in Franklin River, probably like other regions, just generates the best fruit. So. Mm. For the best wine, and so, you know, providing climatically it makes sense. If you're going to try and make something remarkable, then you've just got to chase that site. And we're lucky. We know these little pockets, and they are small pockets often, mm. you know, within blocks on our established vineyard. So yeah, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's all about the site. And then you know, Favi, for example, Favi is a site selection. Then it's a vine selection, then it's a bunch selection, then it's a berry selection.
Wow.
So it's just, it comes back to the site as always.
Yeah. But it's such a great model though, where you're growing fruit and you're selling to other producers in the region, and then you're able to pick out, you know, these beautiful parcels. Yeah, it's a great story. And I believe that you've purchased Brooklyn Valley in Margaret River. Is that right?
Yeah, we have. Yes, that's we're very fortunate to be able to secure Brooklyn Valley. It's a you know, in WA terms, it's a famous site in Willyabrup.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful site. It's, in our view, it's a completely world class site.
Yes,
has a really strong reputation as a vineyard for its Chardonnay and Cabernet. And we purchased it 18 months ago from Accolade, and it's been producing wines for 30 odd years for wines in the Accolade portfolio. And yeah, we're just taking our time now to reimagine that site, what we're going to do down there. But you know, it's not hard to figure out that it'll be around Chardonnay and Cabernet.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, it'll be a few years before you see the end product of what we're thinking about.
Yeah, so same philosophy of looking at those small rows or vines yourselves. And then obviously producing fruit to, you know, support your, you know, beautiful endeavours in doing that.
But also you can get closer to your consumers, right? Will you take Swinney wines eventually to Brooklyn Valley for tasting and that accessibility?
Yes is the answer, totally. Franklin is remarkable from a fruit growing perspective, but it's very isolated.
Mm.
which we love. Having grown up there, we love the isolation.
I was going to say that's a bonus. Yeah,
not
yeah,
for us.
Really. No, no.
Not if we've only got a few days in town, right?
No.
No. Well, it's, yeah. Whereas obviously Margaret River is just the tourism aspect of Margaret River is growing leaps and bounds. So it brings you that Celador opportunity. So,
yeah.
But to Sam's point, we're just applying the same philosophy in terms of site selection. We've gone through a recent exercise with the M38 shooting the site and soil surveys and working out where those pockets are, and we'll go from there. But you know what we call those wines, we're still working that through. And you know, Favi is a distinctly Franklin River story.
Yeah.
Mm. So reflecting our 100 years in Franklin River, so this is something entirely new for us. So we're just taking our time, really.
Yeah.
But whatever, it'll be the same philosophy.
Mm, great, I love it. It's it's unique in our world, I think. But the fact that you've allowed yourself the space and time to have that philosophy, I think, is a real well done.
So, do you grow fruit and sell it to other producers? Is that So we've had a question from Christopher, and he says, given that you do sell to other producers, is there a lot of pressure from them to get access to the Favi fruit?
I wouldn't say pressure. It's
or desire. Then let's go.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest, and we're fine with that. Like one of the benefits really of producing Favi is people say, "How do you grow that fruit? Can I have some of that fruit?" And we say, "Yes, of course, we can." And, there are different parts of the vineyard that can be developed. We can apply the same ethos viticulturally to other parts of the vineyard. So we're absolutely seeing more and more producers wanting to produce their own Favi equivalent, if you like, from our fruit. And we welcome that. So, there's probably maybe half a dozen right now who are producing or about to release wines that would be, let's say equivalent in terms of aspiration, in terms of philosophy. So, we grow that fruit for them, and every winemaker has their own vision of how they want to make it. That's awesome. So, one of the great pleasures we have is seeing different people apply their own vision, their own winemaking philosophy or other to our fruit. It's really rewarding. It's fun.
I mean, fantastic that you guys see it, with an open mind that it can be and it's better for everyone kind of thing, as opposed to no way am I letting anyone in on my secret ingredient, But often in wine regions they will take, they'll do sort of projects where different winemakers are given fruit from exactly the same vineyard and go and make it in your way. So that's, in a way, what you're saying, isn't it? It's like, look at what they've done with this. That was really interesting.
Well, we think of ourselves, our philosophy as a business is, from on a grape-growing business, is we are bespoke grape growers. So we'll grow fruit however you want, within the constraints of the site. So people often come to us and say, this is our aspiration, our price point, our style, the wine, blah, blah, blah. Can you grow fruit for us to that spec? And we typically say yes, and we've got a part of the vineyard that we know the soil profile, the aspect. We know how the fruit performs there, and we reckon we can grow it a certain way. We believe we'll deliver you that outcome. So that's our job in terms of our grape business. Yeah. So we're not precious about that. More people producing fantastic Franklin River Syrah.
The better off you are.
Truly. The better the region is, the better we are, frankly. So, no.
Spreads the word further. Spreads the word further and further, the more brands that are talking about it and getting it into places.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, we grow fruit for the majors, so we grow a lot of fruit for Penfolds and Accolade. And yeah, one end of the scale, you've got fruit going to 389 or 707, you know, very distinct style of fruit and that required for those kind of products. I mean, just really distinct kind of fruit. And other end of the scale, you've got something for La Violetta or Brave New Wines. You know, it's you know, a viticulturalist, you know, have to really sort of stop and think about what we're doing because you couldn't be more different than those kind of producers.
Yeah, yep.
It's a really interesting model. Isn't it? Have you seen the soil,
profile?
The profiling process at all?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a number of producers go through, especially when they're looking for, you know,
sites and things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I know, you know, just the extensive, just the detail that goes through.
Because it sounds amazing as the basis of your business in a way, Matt. So can you just briefly just tell us what do they actually do? Is it done, you know, in the out of the air, you know, as in the air, or how is the actual survey done?
Well, the technology has come a long way from how we used to do it, which
digging up holes. I mean,
drilling holes. Yeah.
Once upon a time, it was pretty crude. You just did a lot of soil pits on a grid basis. These days, it's a combination of technologies you bring together. It's like a sled towed behind or a bar towed behind a motorbike and
sounds really technical right now at this point.
And basically goes down and takes a profile and identifies differences. This is my simplistic explanation.
Yeah, good.
It basically just shows you differences in soil types at different depths. And so then it gives you an interpretation across the whole site. And you're able to pick out where things change and then you ground truth it by doing that. You still do soil pits, but you're not doing hundreds or thousands like you once would have done. You're just doing it to make sure you understand what the differences actually mean, what it's showing you. Mm. And you combine that with leaf density analysis, which is shot from the air, and which tells you also about soil moisture and how the vine's performing on that particular site. You bring together all those kind of technologies and others too, and just gives you a really informed insight as to what's happening on the ground. Mm. Then you combine that with how the fruit looks in the vineyard and the winery, and which comes from just experience. And then you go, well, if planting a variety, let's say Grenache, on this aspect, this soil type, this hilltop, is going to give me, and grow in this way, is going to give me this kind of fruit profile, then all things being equal, if I identify something comparable over here, it won't be the same, but it'll be as close as I can get to how it should perform. Mm. Do you follow me?
It's funny. You know, seeing Rob Walters go through his process of looking for the land for place of changing winds, and then reading just recently that he's acquired another property just southwest of Malmesbury in Victoria. I can imagine the attention to detail and what went into that search as well. But you've got some plantings in Franklin River that would have indicated some of that, you know, vine health and ironstone and what it brings to that variety. So, just that curiosity around it and the extent that you go to is admirable.
Yeah, well, knowing Rob Walters, I'm sure he's done all this work and more.
Yes.
He's a very particular fellow.
Yeah.
But, the science is there. It's not really new anymore. I think if you can do this, well, you should do this. It just tells you so much. And
yeah.
You don't want to. There's enough luck involved as it is in producing wine, but if you can do this, if you bring this discipline to it, it delivers a lot more confidence in the outcome.
Yeah, you've still got to have, I think, you know, with all that data, you've got to have someone really good to interpret it, because you know, so many numbers and so many inputs could just be really daunting to someone who doesn't really have their head around it, and some, as you said, some experience. you know, in the game. And I think it's a fascinating area, Sam. I think, you know, we talk about, you know, being a farmer and then a chemist in the, you know, you've got to be a geologist in part as well, you know, whether that's kind of a really good guess, you know, back in the old days or now with some smarts around it, I think.
Yeah.
Just showing how complex the industry is.
But I think also too there's that modern viticulture, but it's still, you know, there's still a lot of old world techniques that we use as well. And I think it's that really great balance. And yeah, and it is, it's, you know, talking to people who know the land and maybe had farmed the land for other, you know, it could be crops or it could be orchards or potatoes or whatever it is. That actually leads me to one question, Matt. When John Alexander Sweeney settled in 1922, what was the farm? What was farmed at Franklin's?
Yeah, well, it was largely uncleared in 1922. So, and what people were doing in the district at the time, as they were on this farm, was really a combination of things. That was it was orchards, it was timber, and some stock. But they were doing, I think, everything just to survive in those days.
Yes.
Farvey basically, with my grandfather and then my father, slowly cleared the farm. And for a long time, Franklin River was very much focused on merino sheep. So, you know, all through my school years and early professional career, Franklin River was very much about merino sheep. And it really wasn't until, I guess, the early 2000s that that changed. There's still sheep there today, but it's more so, you know, viticulture, of course, and cereal crops.
Yeah.
In 1922, it's extremely remote from Perth.
How
was remote.
Why?
I mean, I remember not, you know, probably only 25 years ago, the service stations were open on a roster once a month on a Saturday or on the weekend. You know, like, this is 1922, it was 100 years ago. That is extraordinary, you know. Led people to there,
I don't know, just talk about intrepid. I don't know, like, it's, I think it was just that mindset at the time, wasn't it? Their bravery is incredible to me.
Totally.
So, yeah, I mean, my great-grandfather came out from England on a gap year and then went back. So I'm sure many people did that.
Yeah.
And he basically, it's an interesting story in a way, in that I think the first vineyard, I think I'm right in saying, the first vineyard in the Great Southern was in Katanning, and which no one knows about really too much. And it was a vineyard, a large vineyard, developed by the Peace family in Katanning in, like, I think it was late 1800s. And only lasted about 10 years until, I think, Edward Peace died. But my grandfather got a job on that property, I think in the vineyard and also running the orchards. But that particular vineyard was, imagine starting a vineyard, an orchard in Katanning in 1898 or something. And, the wines from that, I won gold medals, I think, in France and Paris in, you know, turn of the century, early 1900s. So,
God, how'd they get there?
By boat, I assume. But, yeah, just thinking back, the early settlers were remarkable.
Yeah. And it took, 80 years to plant vineyards. He was scarred from his workings at Katam.
Well, he did a few other things, but once he left the pieces, he went to places like Donnybrook and managed farms down there.
Then
he got a second in Money Orchards, I think he managed, and then he got to Franklin in 1922.
Mm. Great story.
Yeah. At Franklin River, there's not a lot of infrastructure, is there now? But what's the town like if we were to come and visit it?
It's remarkable that it's one of the few country towns that have survived and is doing pretty well. You know how much small rural communities struggle these days, but it's still a very small town, but it's got, you know, a shop and a club or a pub and good facilities. I think the when I went to primary school there, there were 48 kids in the school, and there were two boys in my class, and two girls, and I think it's still the case. So that's probably success in a sense.
That's across the whole primary school. So this is six, 8 to 48, right? Mm. 6 year levels, eight kids per class, kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, there was four in my class.
Yeah.
I left when I was 11 with the boarding school in Perth, but it's Franklin River is a very, very a very pretty little town. Franklin's a glorious region, and but very remote, and it's. We're okay with that.
Yeah,
but
sounds like it.
Sounds perfect.
And I think Swinney Wines puts it on the map in a very big way. And thank you for telling us the story, really, because and well done, Sam, digging it up.
No.
Right?
These little names that pop into your head every so often.
Well, and this is the thing: you travel in circles that many of our listeners don't, and therefore. These are the things we need to, give some time in the sun as such, not under the shade cloth, Matt. Yeah, out actually in the sun.
Exactly. But just talking to Nell and Matt, you can just the professionalism, but also the passion that comes through when they're talking about their wines and their vineyard is, something I love. So, thank you.
Thank you. I mean, I think most wine producers really have that love, where else would you do it? So.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. There's absolutely always passion, isn't there? Matt, thank you. Enjoy your Mother's Day, whatever that looks like for you. And, we'll keep an eye out for Favi Wines. And if anyone wants to look it up, swinney.com.au, and like Sam, put your name down for potential allocation. Go well. That sounds like a fun story.
Thanks very much, guys.
Good one.
Thank you.